Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 31st, 2015. You're listening to the finest poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Somebody was freaking out that I didn't say interwebs last week or something in the intro. And I'm like, hey, I mix it up every week like a real poker player should. I do a different intro. Like, you know, I'll do some the same for a few weeks because that's me folding my, you know, my dead cards in middle position. And then every once in a while I mix it up when I'm on the button. You know what I'm saying?
Right, you have to be unpredictable, right?
That's right. I don't understand. People want me to be predictable, but that's not me. That's not what you get.
You can't play ABC podcasting.
Unless it's about the alphabet. If it's a podcast about the alphabet for little kids, then yeah, ABC works just fine.
That would be the most exciting podcast I've ever listened to.
Hey, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that, Scott, you're probably somewhere on the road again?
Yeah, I gotta say, when I dragged that suitcase out of the closet, like, less than 2 days after I put it back in the closet, I looked at both my cats, and they were sharpening their claws. They're like, dude, we are gonna shred you tonight.
Why didn't you just have your luggage forwarded to California?
I really thought about that. That would have been smart, right?
Man, unbelievable.
Yeah, after that crazy road trip I did last week, I was home for a total of 64 and a half hours before getting on a plane and flying back out here to our West Coast headquarters at Thunder Valley Casino Resort at the Ante Up World Championship. Always enjoy coming out here, even if that means I only had literally 2.5 days at home before I came out. But,
unbelievable.
But having a great time out here. Remember, the World Championship runs through August 11th. Or 10th, I'm sorry. And go to anteupmagazine.com/world championship for all the details. Well, the first event here had well more than 200 players, which was ecstatic. And then Ben Irwin, the manager here, stopped and chatted with me last night and said the whole most of the next day's players were almost completely different, which is great because that means that these players up here, which usually travel in packs, I picked up new players, so the tournament's bringing new people in.
Nice.
And, yeah, and he thinks the reason is that the change in buy-ins really is playing a good part. I mean, their tournament's here for $100 now. It used to be like 140, I think, was the cheapest one. The 240s were dropped to 180. So kind of subtle differences when you look at it from afar, but those differences add up a little bit. And so I'm real excited to see how the rest of this tournament turns out in terms of attendance. But right now we're off to a great start for our third Ante Up World Championship.
And do you think, I wonder too, it has something to do with the fact that it's returned there again so they could plan for it. They knew it was coming back again, right? Whereas with the first one we did, it was in Dominican Republic. Second one was in California. And they're like, well, where's it going to be next year? But now that they know, hey, it's going to be there again and again, now they can make their plans around it, and then the buy-ins are cheaper. So, I mean, it seems like everything is finally getting it all right and coming together, and that's cool. I'm so glad someone showed up.
Definitely saw that on social networking, which is always an interesting trend because that's kind of the early harbinger of how a tournament's going is whether there are people chatting about it on social networking, particularly Twitter. And, you know, last year there was excitement, don't get me wrong, but this year I think there was a lot more. You could tell people were like, you know, hey, this is going to be a big event this year. And I think you're right, it's because so many people came and played last year and saw what a great event it was and then saw the tweaks this year. And so it's that classic momentum, right? You know, after the first one's always the hardest in anything. And then after that, once you establish something good and make it better, then it snowballs from there. So that's definitely part of it.
Excellent.
Now, of course, I always enjoy playing here because I always do well, and I got to say, I am Mr. Consistency, Chris.
Yeah?
So two consecutive Anti-Up Poker Tour events in a row. Oh my gosh.
You consistently have a frog in your throat.
Did you wake me up so damn early when I'm
sorry. Don't worry. I'll fill the dead air here while you hack up along. Don't worry. I'll sing everybody a song or something. Well, but you okay now? You ready to go?
Yes, yeah. So, you know, a couple months ago, I flew out to Vegas for our Anti-Up Poker Tour event at Gold Nugget. Flew all day, got in the tournament, Eliminate by Omaha 8, by the way. Played all night and min-cashed.
Yeah.
Did the same thing again last year.
No way. I can't believe you played last night.
No, actually, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Ben when I saw him, and I'm like, you know, I love this 5 p.m. start because I was able to get in, get to the hotel room, get a little work done, take a nap, go down and do the see my buddy Prem in the spa and do my eucalyptus steam room, really relax, and then sit and play. And I was getting tired towards the end, but nowhere near as tired as I was in Vegas when I was seeing little green men on the wall.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing, you know, I actually played really, really well. I was actually kind of focused on this series out here because when I came out before our Anti-Up Tour event at the 101, I stopped here for a couple days and played the two pair poker tour, support our friends there. And I played terribly in those two tournaments there. I just wasn't really focused. So I told myself, I'm going to be out here for 10 days. I'm going to focus, play really well. And I thought I did, until the end. I made one bad play at the end, but so we got down to the final table, or not the final table, last 16, and they paid 15, right? So the classic bubble share conversation came up.
Yeah.
The other table, I don't know if it was the whole table or a couple people or one person, but no dice. No one wants to pay the bubble. So there was a guy at my table that literally lost his mind over this. He's like, it's 4,600 on top. You guys can't take 180 off of that to pay the bubble? How greedy are you guys? Which on one sense, absolutely I agree. You know, it does seem kind of weird not to pay the bubble with that kind of payout structure. The other side of it is, you know, hey, you know, I'm a firm believer in you sign up for the tournament and you play and you cash where you are, because once you create a bubble at 16, then what about the guy in 17, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just quiet. I'm just listening to this guy fume, though, forever. So then the bubble breaks. Poor guy walks away with nothing, right? And at that point, we go right on break, I think. So during the break, everybody realizes the chop value now is a little less than fourth place money, like $1,400. So our table starts talking, and we're all like, heck yeah. I'm like, I'm ready to go to bed. Like, $1,400 would be nice for me. That'll pay for the rest of my tournaments, right? The other table comes back, and everybody seems to agree with it. One guy.
Oh, no.
One guy vetoes it. And again, totally his right. You know, hey, we're here to play, win. We're not here to play chop poker, right? People lost their minds again.
At that point, everybody takes $50 out of their $1,400, gives it to the sourpuss. He'll be happy then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also think there was probably some pride involved in not wanting to do that, too. Because, you know, here's the thing that happens. And this is, we've talked about chops all the time. And one of the things I love about how they do it here is that when they have a chop discussion, they make sure everybody fully understands what the decision is or the discussion is, right? And then you get I don't know if they do cards or – I think they have cards. And you anonymously vote. And if one person says no, boom, you're out. I didn't get to that point here. The one guy said, no way, I'm not doing it. but I like that because, again, you know, we're not supposed to be playing for chop and no one should be, you know – bullied into chopping if they want to, and then that gives you a little bit of anonymity, although obviously in the conversation, if you're the one quiet guy at the table and everybody else is like, yeah, then the vote comes down, one vote, no one knows that, you know, it is, but, so, you know, hey, it was his choice. I saw the results this morning. I haven't went back to look to see whether that guy won, but people were all like, all right, we're going to knock him out now.
Yeah, it turns vindictive after that.
Yeah, like, one, he's the chip leader. Now, granted, it's not a huge chip lead. And that was the kind of thing is that, you know, because the people at my table were, like, incredulous. How, why wouldn't people chop? And so I'm kind of being kind of political and, you know, nice about it. And that, you know, hey, you know, people want to play for real money. But in this case, at the time that we the chop discussion, the average chip stack was less than 10 big blinds.
Jeez.
So at that point, it really was bingo, right? So, And, of course, Bingo didn't call my name-o, and I was out four players later, the last place for the min cash. But, hey, I'll take it. It's a good start, right? And lots of great tournaments coming up here that I'm looking forward to. They got an Annie-only tournament, which I always do well in out here. I pre-registered yesterday for the Annie-up World Championship Heads-Up Championship, which is going to be great. That's a 64-player max field. And they do breakfast in the morning during the bracket draw, which is always a lot of fun. Okay, you kind of feel like a big shot when you're doing drawing your name out of a hat to see who you play. And, of course, there's a horse tournament, which I won a couple years ago. So a lot of exciting stuff like that. And they got a lot of other great events. So check out andyupmagazine.com/worldchampionship and come out and say hi over the next week or so.
Okay, I'm going to challenge Ben to come up with a structure where every single person gets paid. And nobody can chop. It's a no chop tournament. But even if you go out last, you get something back. Then they can't chop. They can't say we got to chop now. Nope, sorry, you can't chop. It's in the rules, and you all are gonna get money. So you can't worry about the 17th place player because you're all gonna get some money back. Of course, first place will pay like $3 over the buy-in.
Right.
But
it's funny you say that because you know I'm one of these. Maybe it's our journalism background, but I always loathe, cringe at cliches when I hear people use them. Right?
Yeah.
And the poker table is just littered with them, right?
Yeah.
And so we sat down yesterday. A tournament started, and really early. It was a 5 o'clock start, and you know, obviously people were getting off work and registering late, so you knew he was going to do well. When we first sat down, you know, everybody's like, "Oh, let's just chop right now," and everybody jokes about how you do that. You lose money because the you know obviously the rake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's a guaranteed tournament and you chop right away before the guarantee's met. All right.
Yeah, but it's an overlay of like a million. All right, let's all chop.
That's the only time that makes sense. Right? The rest of the time is a corny cliche joke.
That's right. That's hilarious.
Well, speaking of tournaments, I thought this was interesting. Matt Savage, who I think most of our listeners know, is probably one of the best-known tournament directors in the world. Also a beast on social networking. His Twitter is massive. And, you know, I don't follow the Twitter, but he is a Facebook friend. And he posts a lot of stuff on Facebook, too, which I think is better for these kind of things. You can have an extra discussion on Facebook where we're just, you know, Navajo code breaking to try to figure out what people are talking about. So he posted a thing on Facebook. And actually, I'm not talking about the fact that he had to go backstage at Rush, which I thought I would mention to you.
Yeah, I'm wearing my $55 Rush t-shirt right now. So
I'm sure he got a $56 shirt.
Yeah, Matt's definitely got some of the higher end shirts, I'm sure.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that he asked players what, quote-unquote, an excellent structure means to them. Pretty interesting question, right? Because it can go a lot of different ways. Because people always talk about, I need to see the structures. So you look at structure. Oh, that's a good structure. That's a bad structure. And quite honestly, I'm not trying to pick on people, but I don't think a lot of people really understand that.
Right.
They're looking at one thing that they like in the structure and say that's a good structure. If it's not there, they say it's a bad structure. And he was trying to put some weight on the bones here, right?
Right.
Very interesting result, and I'm looking forward to a chat with him. He's actually going to be directing some of our Annie Up World Championship events here next week, including the Open Face Chinese, my favorite event, though, which I should mention. Looking forward to chatting with him about this because I think he did a good job of putting this out there. He got a lot of response. And then summarized it all and then gave you his thoughts. And I think people really respected it. But so he said after all the feedback he got, this is what he decided. The four most important in order from least to important. One, time. Two, levels. Three, player ability. And four, chips.
All right, so the least important was fourth, right? Four chips.
Chips, yeah.
Of the four top four, is what you're saying.
Of the four top four.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Right. I'm sure, free hot dog is probably 78 on the list. Yeah.
Okay.
It was the top four. That was it. And then he went through and mentioned some of the more popular responses on each of those and then his response on it. So I think we'll take these one at a one because I think one by one because it's a very interesting discussion. So he kind of goes in reverse order. So chips. He said what folks said about chips, they want more chips, they want adequate chips, deep stack tournaments, and at least 100 big blinds were common responses.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, chips are the least important component for a good structure. I do agree at least 100 big blinds is mandatory to start for maneuverability, and so you can lose a couple of hands and still come back. But I can run a tournament with 100 in chips that will last 4 days and a tournament with 1 million in chips that lasts 4 hours. That is the best quote I've ever seen about chips. Well, I totally agree. I mean, that's the one thing that you always hear, give me more chips, give me more chips. And I'm just like, I look at these people and say, give me more chips. And they have no idea that chips mean nothing if the structure doesn't account for them.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to take the World Series of Poker main event structure and give you a million chips, yeah, now we're talking, you know, shut down your life because you're going to be playing for the next 4 years, right?
Yeah.
But if you have 1 minute levels and the blinds start at 100,000, 200,000, a million chips means nothing at that point, right? So it all works together on it. So, but the 100 big blinds I thought was a good thing. And, you know, I started thinking about that, and I don't think I play a lot of tournaments that don't start you with 100 big blinds. I mean, and he's talking obviously not satellites or turbos or anything like that. Those are different stories or alternative things. We're talking a good old fashioned missionary position, no limit hold'em tournament here.
Okay, so the one thing I will say is I 100% agree with you about people misunderstanding what it means. You know, like even when I'm doing the magazine, I'm editing the entries that they're sending us to put in their listings for the poker rooms of what their tournament schedule is, things like that. I'm always kind of like cringing when it says 30,000 chips to start, and I'm like, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean anything unless you tell them what the blind structure is, blah, blah, blah. But I always put it in. But here's the deal with these replies, and this is what I want to say. When somebody says adequate chips, they are essentially still saying at least 100 big blinds. That's what they mean by that.
Right. That's probably the adequate part, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so when they say more chips, now we could interpret that as, okay, you're being ignorant and you don't understand what that means. Everybody can have a billion chips, but you can make the tournament last 3 minutes if I make the blinds big enough. But they could still mean by more chips, they could still mean more than 100 big blinds. So to me, deep stacks, that can mean the same thing too. Deep stacks could still mean at least 100 big blinds, but give me 200 big blinds.
Yeah, I think deep stacks was always, and going back to what you said, the 30,000 chips, I mean, you got to remember in poker, there's marketing involved, right?
Yeah.
So I think advertising 30,000 chips, I think for any tournament, people get excited about 30,000 chips. I think that's probably a good number to pick if you're trying to get some people to raise their eyebrows.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to get the smarter players that are going to like, hey, what does that mean? But most players are going, oh, wow, 30,000 chips, I'm there, right?
Right.
And same with deep stack. Deep stack is this great word that somebody came up with that people get excited about and don't have any idea what it means. Do you know what it means?
No, it just means that.
I mean, obviously, I would assume
you think it means a lot.
More chips than you get in the tournament the day before.
Right. Well,
deep could mean anything, right?
Yeah. You better hope it means
that. Events that had 5,000 units.
Yeah, you better hope it means more chips than the day before, but the same structure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, exactly. Yeah, you can double the chips, but if you quadruple the structure, you know, and the time, you know, you cut it in half or whatever, then it's the same thing. So, yeah. But I think there are enough people who are by now get into this game that understand that when they say adequate chips or deep stacks, they mean more than 100 big blinds. And it's hard because you can't just mean one thing. Like, if it's the most important thing, if somebody just said chips, then they have to, you'd think they would have to be meaning, all right, enough that's going to give me enough time, where the time isn't going to be effective, you know, or whatever. You know what I mean? It's such a hard question. That's why this game is so remarkable, because there's so many facets to it. Yeah, so many angles.
Yeah, I definitely think adequate chips is the way to say that, because adequate then means, you know,
time.
I guess some people think adequate is a negative. You know,
right. How was I in bed?
They're all asking, hey, you want to go prom with me? You're quite adequate. That's going to crush you, right?
He was an adequate lover. That is not good. But if it's adequate enough chips, it's all right. It's accurate. Oh, man.
All right. So next, the third of the most of player ability. And he says the replies that he got from players were their player responses about amateur casual player friendly structures being best. And his response was, this is both a tough one to argue, but also a tough one to explain. Most amateurs believe that more chips, time, and levels are what they want, but I truly believe all those things actually favor the pros, so why would the casual player want that? The faster the structure, the more variance there is, and it actually favors the amateur. This is another interesting one that I see all the time, and I totally agree with him. You know, as a recreational player like me, I want to have fun when I'm playing, and so that means I want a decent structure, whatever that is, right?
Right.
I also know, I'm quite aware that the better the structure, the less effective I'm going to be in the tournament, because there are players that spend their entire lives playing poker, and I only play when I travel, and they're going to have an edge on me the better the structure is. But I still want that structure because I'm there to play, right? But if I'm there to cash, I'm there just pure wanton Gordon Gekko greed to win, you should be at a turbo.
Yeah, if you're See, that's the thing though, is that that variety is out there. You can't make one tournament to please everybody. So that if you that's what you want, you wait for that. Like in other words, there are a lot of people who love to just be at a poker table, and they don't care about they may care about winning. Everyone loves to win, but if they got their entire afternoon entertained for a decent buy-in amount, and they could just sit there all day and play because it was a nice, slow structure, and there was a nice mix of amateurs and pros where you can learn from the pro, and you can take advantage of the amateur, and you can have a nice conversation with the middling player, then it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. So I can't really – when he says why would they want that because it would favor the pros over the casual player, well, okay, if I'm going to spend 10 grand on a buy-in, yeah, I'm going to want something that's going to favor me. But right. If I'm going down the street for a $100 buy-in, I'm looking to be able to make my chips last, so I'm not felt like I don't have feel like I have to shove after one level,
right?
And I want to be able to play against people that I can watch them and go, wow, that guy's a good player. Maybe learn something from watching him, and at the same time, be able to dodge him and play these other people and take their chips until I get away from the other guy or whatever. So I just don't think there's one answer to this. And when he says that, why would they do that? That's why, because I think there are certain tournaments that I don't mind sharing the table with a pro. What I do mind is having my hands cuffed while I'm doing it. So I want to be able to enjoy my afternoon.
Yeah, but you know, I guess the flip side is that you're not going to have as many pros at a bad structured tournament, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
I think this is the toughest part of all of this for tournament directors because, I mean, we saw this at our Annie of event out in Gold Nugget, you know, our good friend Sam, who designed the structure. You know, he's really responding to player suggestions from the year before that said the structure wasn't good.
Right.
So he made the structure really good and probably made it too good because all the events became two-day events. And then people came in this year and like, I don't want to play 2 days. I want to play 1 day.
Right.
So now you got to figure out, you know, give players a good structure but also get it over in time. And you see this a lot of places too, especially nightly tournaments. You know, no one wants to get there at 7 o'clock and still be playing until 4 a.m. when they have to be at work at 8 a.m., right?
Right.
So for that, a good structure is a tournament that's going to get you out by 11. You know, you feel like you had good enough play, but you're going to be on the road at 11. And that's in, you know, comparing that to some other just random tournament, that is not going to be an excellent structure because you're trying to get a 100-player tournament done in 4 hours, right?
Right.
But that's also what players probably want. So,
I agree. I think that, and again, that's the beauty of the fact that you have all these different times of day when you could play. You have these different buy-ins to weed out what you don't want and what you do want, and stuff. So, it really is a tough thing to narrow down. I think. I mean, it's very difficult to please everybody and to do it on Facebook like this. It must have been.
Right.
You know,
right.
It must have been ridiculous to see how many responses he got.
Yeah, a bunch. And you're right. Some of them aren't very helpful. Other ones are. And other ones are, you know. And again, it's tough to make these responses in a vacuum, too, because, you know, a lot of it depends on the other responses, right?
So, right.
All right. So moving on to levels. He said the replies about levels, not skipping and more levels was a common response. And his response was, many got this one right. Not skipping levels is very important for a, quote, excellent structure, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I don't know how many recreational players know what skipping levels means. I mean, because you see so many different levels in places. But, you know, I guess what they're getting at is, you know, don't do this classic, you know, 100, 200, 200, 400, 400, 800.
Yeah.
Have it done in an hour. You know, if you got to do that, do a normal, you know, quarter 50, you know, 75, 150 kind of structure. But, you know, cut the time down and cut the chips down so it ends at the time you want. So, you know, you're playing the right, the accepted levels and that. So you're not speeding up the tournament by levels. You're speeding it up by other factors.
Yeah. Yeah. I know when we play with the family here, it's always double every level because I want to get it over with as soon as possible.
Right. all right, and then time. So the player replies about time. Players ask for longer levels, more time, 40, 45, 60, 90, 120 minute levels. But he said some actually prefer shorter tournaments and turbos. And his response about time is like, this is the best way to control the length of the tournament and whether the tournament becomes deeper or a crapshoot.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's true, because some people want to get in and get out. You know, they're like, hey, I got 2 hours before I got to go to bed, or I've got 2 hours to kill before I go to work, you know, or whatever it is, 4 hours, you know, whatever it is. Some people, hey, I just want to get in and get out and try to, you know, get my fix on for poker, you know, because I've been jonesing all day to play and whatever. So, yeah, it makes sense that if they want a quick one, they do that, and if they don't, they play the longer one. I mean, it gets back to the variety. There's so much variety you could possibly, you could make literally any kind of tournament that you want with the variants that are in there. It's pretty crazy.
Right. Yeah. the last thing I'll say about this is, this is an idea we stole for the cruise from our friends up at Running Aces. And I really liked this when they did a tournament series up there. They had one structure that you use for every event, but they changed the time to the chips to make the events different times, you know? Mm-hmm. So if it's like an early morning event that they want to be over quick, then you get fewer chips or shorter levels. And that way, you know, they didn't have to print out 100 different structure sheets, right?
That's right.
One structure sheet, and you just tell people time, and, you know, that's kind of what we do on the cruise as well, too. And I think it's worked well, you know. Yeah. We had the same structure, but we might give you a couple extra chips for the main event and a slightly longer level, so it lasts a little longer, but you're used to the same structure for the entire cruise or the entire tournament. Now, obviously, it's a little simplistic in big tournament series because you get different things going on, but for the most part, it works.
All right, we got Annie updates. We have very limited availability left for our November 7th Annie Up Poker Cruise. Always our best value and largest cruise of the year. Rates start at $399 per person while staterooms last. And literally, I hear Gene on the phone. My wife handles all the bookings. It's just like they're going fast for that cruise. So if you're going to come on our November 7th cruise, you better act.
Yeah, I checked online the other day. It's nearly $600 per person online right now. So
wow, so you're getting a great deal. It's unbelievable. Also, we're getting strong bookings for our January 24th Los Angeles cruise and next year's Alaskan cruise. So get all the details on those fine sailings as well as two other Florida sailings at AnnieUpCruises.com. And don't forget about Papes. It's our free online fan series, which holds events on all dates, ending with a 6. So next events are August 6th, August 16th, and August 26th. Details on both can be found in the AnnieUp Nation events group discussion on PokerRadius.com. All right.
Yeah, no, good. Noticed that Poker Radius has had a little technical difficulties this week. They are working through it, so hopefully they'll be back online soon.
All right. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do a call to Foreign Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. Comes from our Mid-Atlantic ambassador, Michael Young. Says, I ran into a strange situation in a recent tournament. A guy at my table was just making all-in blind bets and shoves. He said when he was under the gun, he would shove dark and other blind spots. He got lucky for a while and busted me. He was the big blind. I was under the gun plus one. Blinds were 600, 1200 with a 100 ante. I made it 5K to go. One caller, then the villain shoved blind. He said, I watched him. He never looked at his cards. With enough to have me covered. I called. He turned over queen, deuce of hearts, caught a queen. I didn't improve. I know ace-king suited isn't a pair, but it's a pretty strong hand. He sounds frustrated.
Yeah. I wish I had better advice here.
Yeah, he did the right thing.
You know, because in a cash game, you can get up and leave, which is normally what I suggest.
Yeah.
In a tournament, you can't – well, you can do that, but you don't want to do that, right? And, of course, it depends on your position at the table, which is what really screws you here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would never leave a cash game, though. I'm sorry. I've had this happen to me down at One Eye Jags, and I just ripped this guy a new one. I took so much money off the guy doing that. Came in with his paycheck, kept going all in blind, just waited for the hand, and I took all of his money in, like, 20 minutes. It was awesome. So, I mean, I feel bad for him in this tournament. Tournament, yeah, you're kind of screwed. But he made the right move here. You had ace-king suited. You'd raise what you were supposed to. He went all in. You're not folding there to two random cards. There's no way. You got to call. I know you're frustrated, but you made the right move, I think.
But, you know, again, I guess what I'm saying is that this guy's turning this game into luck for everyone else, right? So, obviously, I know mathematically this is the right move, and I'm not saying he shouldn't have. But, you know, Mike sat down to play poker, right? He sat down to play, you know, raise this and see a flop and blah, blah, blah. And this guy's turned it all into a coin flip game, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's not why I want to play. So, you know, that's what I think makes it tough. And then the problem is, you know, it's nice if it works out the way it did for you, where you get the guy's money.
Yeah.
But depending on where you're sitting at the table, you got to be worried that this guy's going to go shove, but what if somebody else wakes up with a hand after you decide that you want to shove on this guy or call or whatever, and then now you're racing two people to get this one guy's chips. And that's why it changes the dynamic so much. Obviously, this guy paid his money. He can play however he wants. But it's unfortunate that he's really taken the joy out of the game, I think, for everybody else at the table.
Sometimes these guys do that for a little while to build a stack, and then they settle down, too. I've seen that happen, right? Where they get their stack, and then they're like, okay, now I've got enough to play the way I want to play. And although it was pretty deep into the tournament already. It seemed like this guy might have had to go or something. I mean, 600, 1,200 with 100 ante? That's a long way into that tournament to just be shoving all the time.
Yeah, I would think, right?
Seems like this guy just wants to lose. He needs to go or something. But I definitely would have done what he did, though. I would have called ace-king
suited. And that's the thing how it always works out, right? You know, where you're like, yeah, wife, don't worry. You go play roulette, and we'll go to dinner at 8 o'clock. I'll be out of this tournament. And then at 7:45, you're like, all right, I'm not going to get divorced over this tournament. So you start shoving. And then you hit everything, right?
Yeah.
Yep. My wife comes out at 8 o'clock. You said you'd be out. I'm like, all right, I've got 4 million in chips now. What do you want me to do?
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home to the Anti Up group discussions. Comes from Dave Rendall. Since we were in a $1,000 tournament in a major Las Vegas tournament series, a player in earlier position raised, and it folds the big blind, who shoved all in. The original raiser tanked for a while before throwing both his cards face up out, saying, I call. He never moved or even touched any of his chips, and his statement was not real clear, and the dealer thought he said, I fold. The big blind threw his hand in face up as well. Most of the table heard the second player call, but we all just watched as the dealer scooped up both hands, turned the cards over, and pushed them into the muck. The dealer then pushed the pot to the big blind. The deck was never mixed into the muck. Several players said, wait. And the player at issue said he called. The dealer said, I heard you say fold. Several more of us confirmed we thought he heard call. We heard call. The floor was called and ruled that as long as the exact hands were known, they can be brought back. Someone asked how mucked cards can be taken out of the muck. The floor said these were tabled hands and not mucked hands, so out they came. The deck was never compromised, so the hand was reset and the flop, turn, and river were dealt. Was this correct?
Elliot says, it sure would have been nice if any players at the table, especially the pair involved in the hand, would have spoken up and said, stop! The PSA is over. Now over. If the hands and board don't play in this situation, what's to stop dealers from doing this every time their least favorite players get action on their all-in bets? Thankfully, the players were paying attention and were able to assist in reconstituting all-in hands. The deck, having been luckily kept to the side, was intact for the board to be dealt. The rules that apply to the showdown apply here as well, since the action was closed and the active hands must be tabled. The card speak rule means that the players, as well as the dealer, are responsible for reading the hands and determining the winner at showdown.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I get this all the time. People get freaked out about the muck. They think it's like this, you know, ring of fire or something. You know, once the cards touch it, they disintegrate and they can never come back. And that's not really what it's meant for. It's, you know, again, if hands are tabled and you're trying to push the pot to the right person or make the action correct and you can retrieve them, they can be fished out of the ring of fire, folks.
Yeah, rules are there as a guide. They're not set in stone. There's human error. That's why we're all human, you know. All right. Hey, we get the Comedian O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a friendly $1-$2 PLO8 home game. Most people are just here to have a good time, and while there are a couple of extremely solid players, there are a few players that are new to Omaha. The max buy-in here is 100, and it's early in the night. Most players still have their initial starting stack, and we are no exception. The table is seven-handed. The blinds post, under the gun folds, the plus one folds, and the MP makes it $6 to go, a standard raise. It's folded to us on the button, and we look down at the ace of clubs, queen of hearts, five of spades, tray of clubs. Since it's still early in the night and we're fairly new to this home game, we decide to keep the pot small and call. The MP has claimed to be familiar with Omaha 8, but other than that, we really have no information to go off on this guy. He's won one pot, but it didn't go to showdown and wasn't really a monster. He has us outchipped by $10. It's folded to the big blind, who calls, and we all see a flop with $19 in the pot. It comes down the ace of diamonds, queen of spades, five of clubs. Interesting flop. We hit three pair, although obviously we can only play two of them. The big blind mucks instantly. That must have been a complete miss. But the MP makes it $12 to go. He raised preflop, so maybe that's the case ace and gives him top set. But I want to see how this hand plays out. We make the call. With about $40 in the pot, the turn is the three of spades. And once again, our opponent makes a bet, this time $25. So, we've got eight outs to fill up, but most of those are not nut outs. Are we good here? What's the move?
First, I'm going to say I don't like the call on the flop. We have a ton of boat outs for the high, and our low is decimated. I don't want to let a live low draw get there cheaply when my high has so much potential. So I would have raised there. And remember, I have now cashed in two limit Omaha. So I kind of know what I'm doing in terms of cashing. but since we didn't, we don't know whether our opponent's turn bet is yet another continuation or whether he has a strong hand. And since we have no low and we can't be confident our high is good right now, I'm going to call and reassess on the river if we don't boat up.
My first reaction was, ugh. I hate it when I flop three pair. And I hate it even more when I turn four pair. I don't think
last
mind.
Night lost it.
Yeah, I don't think I mind a call on the flop just because this is the type of flop that could hit a preflop raiser pretty hard with made hands and redraws. So I wouldn't want to raise here with this. And I don't think I'm going to fold right away just because I do have at least one street. But once that turn came, I agree with you. I might call the turn and see what happens on the river, but I might fold too. It just depends on really my feeling and how my night's going and my stack and whatever. But four pair. Oh man, that's what I hate about this game when I play it. It's just like you've got three pair, you've got four pair, you've got nothing. You know, it doesn't make sense. It's like goes against everything that's great about poker, but I don't know. All right, here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. This wasn't an easy play for me, but ultimately I think we came to the right decision. Our opponent has been aggressive since the onset of this hand, and even though we don't know much about him, that's got to be worth something. The lure of having eight full house outs in Omaha 8 is as real as the song of the sirens. Most of the time, it just leads to disaster. I'd only be 100% comfortable seeing an ace on the river, and with three wheel cards out there, we might already be behind the nut low. We sigh and fold. Our opponent rakes in the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying Omaha is a game of the nuts. If you don't have it, you better have a good draw to it. Otherwise, all you have is a prayer. I hope to see you on the felt.
Song of the Sirens, I love it. I definitely can't fall to fold there, but I think a call was a more prudent move, especially in a game of newbies. And I think that was a big part for me. And, you know, I don't know whether this guy kind of knows the game, or knew the game, kind of understands it, so that's a little squishy there, but obviously if it's somebody, if I'm playing with the 80-year-old Omaha players every day, it's a different story. But when I have a bunch of people that look excited because they have four cards and all this combination, that's a completely different story at that point.
Man, nothing like having four pair and having the fold. My dad was playing this game and he had that hand, he would blow a gasket if you folded. But I don't blame O'Malley for getting out now. I mean, again, I could have gone either way on that. But really, I mean, you have to boat, hope it's the high boat. And even then, you're not even getting, you only get half the pot. You have to get out. So I don't.
Yeah, I understand why people hate this game because it's for reasons like this. And last night, we had a massive pot right towards the bubble. Probably the biggest pot I saw the entire night. Uh-huh. And the guy to my right, who was really a solid player, really good player, on the river, we had an all-in player already, and then when he was heads up against an active player, and he thought forever, and finally folded two pair, and his two pair was like sevens and fives, I think, and folded that, and it would have taken a high. The other guy had sixes and fours. and a low, of course. Not low. And the all-in guy had a nut low as well, too. But he totally would have taken the entire half, high half. And one of the other guys' table was like, what are you doing? How could you fold that there? Because, again, you go back to the limit mentality, right? At the end, it's one more bet. He's closing it off. But it's also tough to say that on a board where it was, I think the seven might have been the highest pair. You know, so there are all kinds of straights and lows out there to think that your 7-5 was good. But there's one more bet for a lot of chips, and that's what makes it really tough.
Yeah, 7-5, 6-4 on an Omaha board, Omaha 8 board.
Yeah.
I mean, you know someone's got the straight, and they didn't.
Well, that's just crazy. It. I mean, I won a hand with a pair of fours last night, and, you know, you just never know because of how people are playing what they have. You know, it's a very draw-heavy game, too. So, yeah. You know, I was raising people on the turn with the nut flush draw and the nut low draw and biffed on all of it.
Wow.
But that's the proper play because you want to get that money in now before it gets there. Once it gets there, then, you know, if you don't have clubs in your hand and the clubs are on the board, you're not going to get money out of them. So
yeah.
That's what kind of makes those pocket fours win sometimes because, you know, everybody's draws.
Jeez.
Dzień dobry, nazywam się Sabina Gadecki i ty słuchasz do Anti Up.
All right, it's time for our hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Our favorite big band player, Bit Guru, is back. And, of course, you know he's playing Pot Limit Omaha 8, so we're really just crushing you this show, right? I played Omaha 8, Miley's playing Omaha 8, and now Big Gru is playing Omaha 8.
Oh, man, this is just like torture.
All right, so he's still able to play online, so this is a $1.50 Turbo Omaha High-Low Pot Limit event, so Pot Limit rather than Limit, and four-handed. And we're at the 80-160 level, so blinds at 40-80. And
wait a minute. Hold on, you're losing me. You said 51 or 150. Well, how much was the buy? What was the buy?
$1.50 buy-in.
$1.50. Okay, wow. Yeah. I got to gauge what I'm going to think about the buy-in. You know, if it's $1.50, these people might be making different moves than if it was 150. Okay, $1.50 he bought in for this. Okay.
I'll give you a little advice on that, Chris. Don't think.
All right, I'm not going to think of it. I knew I smelled something burning. I didn't know what that was, but now I know.
It looks like our hero is third in chips. One chip leader's got him double covered, and then the short stack is about 600 below him. So kind of your standard towards the end of a tournament situation.
Okay.
All right, so let's see. We are first to act with 10 of clubs, king of diamonds, 9 of spades, 9 of hearts.
Fold.
Absolutely, right?
Well, we're playing PLO 8. Why am I playing for half the pot in a tournament where I'm third in chips so I can get the other guys out and move up? And then, yeah, I'm not even playing it. 2 9s. As soon as I see a 9 in any Omaha game, I'm folding. Almost always.
I'm glad that we've developed good friendships with folks that write into us so we can actually be completely honest with them, like Grandma, right, when we're on the show here. I always thought it'd be cool, you know, if I ever joined a kickball team or softball team, my number's going to be 09. No nines.
No nines.
And our good friend here has 2 of them in his hand and really nothing to go with it. So this is really a pretty incredibly terrible hand for Parliament Omaha 8.
Plus, the nines don't even go like with the suits. There's not even like the king of diamonds. It's not even like it's the king of spades or the king of hearts to get you into more trouble. It's just so bad. Okay, so 9 works with a 10, and you can make a really bad straight with the king, but yeah, and you're under the gun. I realize it's only four-handed, but that even if it was a full table and you went all the way around the table folds till you got 4 players left and you were in the hijack or the cutoff, I don't care. This is a horrible hand. It really is. I would let it go.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if you told us how as a single table sit and go. All right, so yeah, so we're on the bubble here too. So that's even worse at this point. I don't want to put any money in. You know, when I'm third in chips here, unless I have to or have a good hand. So this is probably the easiest fold ever in Omaha.
Yep. All right, that's a good show.
Yep. See you tomorrow. Yep. Of course, our hero makes the call. The chip leader gets out of the way. And small blind calls and the big blind checks. So three-handed to the flop, which is the seven of hearts, eight of diamonds, five of spades.
Well, we're just whiffing on everything. Yeah, so we got an open-ended straight draw. But
open-ended, yep.
But still, now the low could already be there, so now they're going to be pumping you, hoping, you know, that you don't get there, and they're going to keep taking your money all along every street. It just, this is the reason not to play.
Kind of know where this hand's going, right, because it checks to us, right? So yeah. Now we're open-ended, and, you know, obviously we can't fold now because it's checked to us.
Yeah.
But now the open-ended, we get excited about it when we really shouldn't. You know, the other thing about the nines, too, is, you know, you don't want to flop a set of nines in this game either because it's the worst set that's not a low.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so I assume there's no conversation here, right?
I'm waiting for you to move on because I don't know what else to say, really. I think I would check here. Maybe I consider making a bet to see if these guys didn't have lows because they were in the blinds, you know? Like, maybe they just – the big blind checked because he had to. He already had his money. And the small blind maybe came along because he had four high cards and misses. Maybe I consider that. But in this – I mean, really, in this situation when you're on the money bubble and you're second in chips – and you've really got nothing but a draw and an overpair, I think that I probably would just check behind too and hope, like, the jack comes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I really can't defend anything other than a check here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the problem is that, you know, if anybody can have any two low cards and have you beat here. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to call you if you bet. So I guess there is some argument there. But at this point, this is when I kind of look at my cards and go, oh my god, did I just shoot like three shots at tequila? Free flop. What am I doing in this hand? I'm like, all right, keep calm. We'll get out of this hand all right.
Yeah, we'll just check our way
check
out of
the
it.
The end, and you know, hey, if I hit my straight and it holds up, great. But all right, he of course checks, and we go to the turn, which is the tray of hearts. So our board now is seven of hearts, eight of diamonds, five of spades, tray of hearts. No help for us. Small blind decides to bet 160, big blind calls, and on us.
Yay! We get to get out of this hand and not worry about anything and realize we made a mistake.
Still alive, and we have a chance of cash still.
yeah, just fold.
Oh, no, he calls.
Oh, no. All right.
Sorry, big crew. Don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, straights beat you if you beat your nines, because there are straights there easily that can get there. Lows now could beat you for half the pot if your nines were good. And you're going to have to really probably hit a jack to even think about it and hope it's not, you know, the jack of hearts. So, it's, wow, that's like literally three cards that you're hoping for now. Just three. And that call does not warrant that. So, you got to fold.
I guess technically a six would give you the nut straight too, right? But
6, 7, 8. Oh, yeah, 9, 10. Yeah, okay, six would too. Yeah.
So, I guess you get a couple more outs. But you're right, that's you don't want hearts.
So, you got six outs.
But you're drawing to half the pot. And you know, I said at the top of the show, I made one mistake and towards the end of the tournament, and this was it. I called drawing to half the pot, which is the absolute worst thing you can do in Omaha. And I can't believe I did it last night, and I can't believe Big Guru's doing it here. Because you got to get there, and when you get there, you're only going to get half the pot if you get there.
Right.
And I didn't get there. And I'm going to guess that he probably does get here because it's hand of the week. But if he doesn't get there, then that's... I mean, now you're putting 160 in to win half the pot. Maybe.
Right.
That's tough, right?
Right.
All right, the river is the jack of hearts, of course. So our final board is seven of hearts, eight of diamonds, five of spades, tray of hearts, jack of hearts. So we do hit our straight, but cannot be comfortable with it, I don't think. Small blind bets 540 now. Big blind calls as well, too. And it's on us.
I'm still folding. I don't have the nuts. I don't have near the nuts.
Yep.
You know, the hearts got there. And the low got there. So even if you called, you could be losing the high, and you can't win the low. Yeah, I'm done. I think I still fold.
Well, the good news is Big Guru woke up from his stupor and folded.
Oh, good.
Which I think is funny now. I mean, maybe you just, at this point, maybe you're worried about the hearts. But if you're worried about the hearts at that point, you probably shouldn't call the turn, right?
So, right.
But, it, you know, obviously the right play, because we can't be good, I don't think. But... It's just unfortunate we got this far into this, particularly when we're on the money bubble for a sit-and-go.
Yeah. And again...
Because even if we hit this and it's good, we're only going to win half the pot, right?
Because
there's got to be a low out there with this. I mean, you never know what the high is going to be, but you always know there's some sort of low, and we have no low. So it's not even like our emergency low is going to be possibly good. We have to go low. So
even if you went back in time and the flop came and then you bet the flop and you bet pot, those hearts got there, essentially saying that probably one of these guys had hearts. And if they got there with the hearts, which I don't know if he tells us what they made because it is an online hand, so you might know. But if the hearts got there, no matter what bet you made, they weren't folding. Especially if they had like the ace deuce hearts. Obviously, they're not right. going anywhere. So, you know, that's the thing you have to always worry about too, is that the nut hearts are there, so they could just keep representing that they're going for the heart flush, but they have the nut low, and they're just free rolling against you. And you can't, no matter what you do there, you can't play that hand right, I don't think, except for folding it pre-flop.
All right, well, obviously it's online, so we can see what the showdown was. And the small blind turns over ace of clubs, tray of clubs, deuce of spades, nine of diamonds. Pretty good hand. Mm-hmm. And the big blind shows the five of clubs, deuce of diamonds, four of spades, ten of hearts.
Wow, nobody
wins
had hearts.
The high of the pair of fives.
Nobody had hearts either. Wow. Yeah, but you can't be results oriented. I mean, you have to make the right move, not the right move afterward. You know, that's terrible. That's just terrible.
This is what I'm talking about. It is why the game is so frustrating to some folks, and why it's so awesome for others is that, you know, the guy was going for a low there, and what do you know? His I ended up being good with a pair of fives.
So we lost not a lot of chips. We're probably still close to third or tied for – I mean close to second or tied for third or something
like
that.
Yeah, we only lost, 200 – looks like only 200.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not tragic. But the problem is that stuff adds up. You know, if you keep calling off 200 each time, you got 10 hands.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Sorry, Big Guru, but hey – I told you, PL08 is not a good game, so you deserve this. I'm just kidding. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.